Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, the Disney 100 is just days away and we have the details. Mickey and Minnie are almost ready for their premiere.
Black History Month celebrations, new tiki mugs, a small upgrade to It's a Small World. We talk about Toontown and more. DL Weekly starts now.
This is your captain speaking to you from the wheelhouse. I'd like to welcome all of you aboard the DL Weekly podcast. For safe passage on our trip, please do not sit or climb on the outside railings, and be sure to watch your children. The water can be unpredictable in these parts, and we'd sure hate to lose any of you.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of January 25th, 2023. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. Thank you to Christopher P., Sarah W., Jason W., and Elijah B. for becoming official weekly tiers on our Patreon, and also to Olivia S., who increased their support. Our supporters get some pretty fun perks like DL Weekly swag, bonus content, and access to our Discord community. A special reminder that we do have a Patreon survey, so if you are a supporter at any level, there is a survey link on Patreon for you to do to fill out to kind of give some feedback about the show and some perks and some various other things. We'll also be sending a message out with that link again a little bit later this week. If you'd like to have some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to join the community.
Well, if you enjoy listening to the show, please consider rating and reviewing the show on your podcast app. It helps other Disney fans become weekly tiers and part of the community.
Well, it's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news.
Hello everyone, this is Eric Johnson with Concierge and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland, in the D180 we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We start our journey in Walt Disney World, where it's high time you started planning a trip to a galaxy far, far away. Also, plan a trip to Central Florida at the same time. That's right, Disney is finally offering some discounts on the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser starting this February and running through September. The main caveat is you have to have a Disney Resort hotel stay before or after your trip abroad. We recommend staying at a Disney hotel before or after your trip anyway. Disney is great about getting your luggage where it needs to go with minimal effort from you. And why not? You're spending two nights at one of the most immersive and exciting destinations in Walt Disney World. Here's the deal. Your galactic cruise encompasses two glorious nights of interplanetary fun. When you spend two more nights at a Disney resort, save up to $700 on your room. Get two more nights to explore the rest of Walt Disney World at a pretty nice discount. There are plenty of specific nights when this trip doesn't apply, so check the fine print before you book your trip. If you need some extra incentive to visit the Earthly Disney parks, how about a return of some favorite guest interactions? Ariel, the Little Mermaid herself, returns to her grotto in the Magic Kingdom on January 22nd. Belle's fun story location, Enchanted Tales with Belle, opens up on February 19th. Both of these experiences allow you to meet these princesses on their home turf, and both will be offered on the Genie Plus service, giving you a little extra value out of that purchase. Let's hop across the pond to Disneyland Paris, where their 30th anniversary celebration continues. To further celebrate this occasion and highlight the new Avengers campus at the resort, the parks roll out a new nighttime spectacular on January 28th. Until May 8th, 2023, you can see this new show featuring all of your favorite Marvel characters. The new show marks the first appearance of Shang-Chi in Paris, with Captain America, Captain Marvel, Scarlet Witch, and many other Marvel heroes. You can expect a massive new spectacular with all of the best effects. Newly reorchestrated Marvel themes, projection effects, fireworks, you name it. Disneyland Paris also doubles down on its groundbreaking drone effects with new skybound animations that illustrate the icons of Marvel heroes using up to 500 drones. This is a huge deal, folks. Disneyland Paris is making big strides with their nighttime spectaculars, and you might want to think about heading over to see for yourself. Another Disney anniversary is coming up soon, and we're getting a little more detail. Join in as the Disney Cruise Line turns 25 this summer. All five of the cruise line's ships will host special celebrations from May through September during their Silver Anniversary at Sea. Expect new fireworks shows on most of the sailings to the Bahamas, Caribbean? And Mediterranean destinations. Join the ship's captain for a toast with special appearances of Mickey and Minnie in costumes for the occasion. And for those who have sailed with the cruise line multiple times, expect a special commemorative gift sent to your stateroom. And that's 180 seconds. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you would like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, concierge. We look forward to planning something special for you and yours. I'm Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Well, thank you, Eric, for that update.
Now let's get to the news.
Well, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway opens this Friday for the kickoff of the Disney 100 celebration starting at Disneyland. With the attraction opening, guests will be utilizing a virtual queue with no standby access. Guests will also be able to purchase an individual lightning lane to experience the new attraction.
I am so excited that the day is finally upon us. We're just a couple of days away as of the recording of this episode. It's this Friday. I'm curious to see how this goes. I wish everyone the best of luck that is going to be their opening day because, as I'm sure everyone knows, it's going to be a wild ride. I'm curious to know what the individual lightning lane price is going to be on opening day. Quite frankly, I'm very surprised that they're offering paid individual lightning lanes for this on opening day. I don't think they have done that for an attraction yet. The most recent big attraction opening was Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind over in Epcot. And I don't think currently you can buy a lightning lane or do the virtual queue, but opening day you were able to. You can now.
Okay.
But I don't think you were able to opening day. I think it was strictly virtual queue. So that's interesting to me. I could be wrong. Let me know in the comments. Let us know if we're wrong about that. But I think this may be the first time they've offered both.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, first of all, it's opening in a not completely done and open land, which I think then a virtual queue is great for that. I think that for the people who get freaked out that they, like with Rise, people frantically hitting the buttons to try to get a virtual queue, that if you just want to bypass that stress and pay the money to get in,
well,
I think that's a good
choice.
I'm
wondering how fast those are going to get snatched up, too.
I don't know. We'll
I think those will go. I think those will go real quick too. I'm curious. I'm really excited to hear about everyone's experiences. We have quite a few weekly tiers that we know that are going, so I'm very excited for all of them. And I wish everyone the best of luck. I'm hoping you all don't get chosen for like the absolute last group of the night to go, so you're having to kind of hang out all day just waiting for your turn. But I just can't wait. I know a lot of people, this will be their first time experiencing Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway as well, which it's such an incredible attraction. And I'm very excited to see how they brought it to life at Disneyland.
It didn't seem like the Walt Disney World version of Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway had the same, at least not that I can remember, and we don't follow them as closely as we do Disneyland, to be fair, but I don't think it had the same ups and downs that Rise has had with, closing and opening. So I'm hoping that the virtual queue system will be smoother because they won't have to like stop and then have a backlog and all of that stuff.
I hope so too. Well, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway will be closing each night for the fireworks, much like Toontown had been before the closure of the land. On nights that the park remains open until after 11, the attraction will reopen. But if the park closes at 10 p.m. or earlier, the attraction will not reopen for the remainder of the night.
I get it. Part of me is a little sad because it's going to be a popular new attraction. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to want to do it. And the fact that it has to close. Now, I will say, you know, on nights that have fireworks, Toontown had to close the launching areas there. It's a safety thing.
Yes.
I get it. I totally understand. I don't want anybody to get harmed or any issue to happen or anything like that. I will say it also makes sense, even though I'm sad about it, that they would not reopen it because if the fireworks are, let's say, 9:30 and they get over close to 10, by the time they do all their inspections and stuff, the attraction would be open, what, like half an hour or something? So I don't see the point to keep the cast members through all that time because they also have to close fairly good amount before the fireworks to make sure that everybody cycles through and then gets out of the area. So I feel, because Fantasyland's like that. And so I'm sad that it has to be that way, but for the safety of everybody involved, plus I feel like the busier days are the ones that are open till after 11 anyway, so we'll have to see. And with virtual queues and individual lightning lane, I don't think it'll be too bad. Well, costumes have been unveiled for the cast of Mickey Minnie's Runaway Railway. The costumes feature designs that allow cast members to reverse the pieces to change scenes at a moment's notice. They are made of vibrant colors and textures. Eagle-eyed guests can be on the lookout for hidden Mickeys on the costumes, in addition to other elements that connect the costumes to the attraction.
They are so fun. It's been a while, so we Tag and I got to experience Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway back at, what was it, the fall of 2020 when we did our road trip down to Walt Disney World. So it's been a little while since we got to experience this attraction, and we were only able to experience it once because it was still quite new, very popular. I think maybe we did
remember.
It twice.
We might have done it twice.
Maybe twice, but it was the same day. Honestly, this is I feel horrible admitting this to the universe. I did not remember what the costumes looked like for cast members until like they brought these up. And I forgot that they're like, I just love the fun cartoony aspects because it looks like parts of their costume are 2D. So like there's a bow tie I'm looking at in the photos that we have linked to our show notes that looks like it's flat, but it looks like it's just straight out of a cartoon. And there's also like a handkerchief, same way that it's flat, but very cartoon. It's just very fun. I think it's really smart since they kind of have, for those of you that haven't experienced the attraction, we won't give anything away, but there are two areas and kind of two different sides. So it makes sense that we need things that the cast members can quickly swap depending on where they're stationed. Yeah, when they're rotating. So I thought that was a really, something really fun and really clever.
Yeah, I was trying to find a picture of the costumes from Disney World.
I'm sure they're probably the same.
All I remember is that I thought the ones that were in Hollywood Studios and Disney World were more like movie theater looking costumes rather than this. But I could be wrong. I'm trying to find pictures, but I'm not seeing anything. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But it's a great attraction. I'm very excited for it. I do think that these costumes fit very well into Toontown because, well, here, is this? Yeah, so they just have like a plain.
So, yeah, no, here we are. It is a different costume. Okay, I don't feel as crazy.
They look like movie theater, like classic movie theater usher kind of costumes. Yeah, so I think it's going to be a great attraction. I think that this look of the costume fits very well into Toontown in that colorful kind of wacky way.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that it is kind of reversible.
Mm-hmm. With the celebration quickly approaching, some of the decor has been appearing around the resort for the Disney 100. For guests arriving at the Mickey and Friends or Pixar Pals parking structure, there are new large banners along the tram route commemorating the opening years of milestone attractions, movies, and more. More on the banners and the kind of hullabaloo that went along with them later. But continuing on, character banners are also in the Esplanade, and a platinum medallion with Disney 100 Years of Wonder has been installed above the entrance to Disney California Adventure. Buena Vista Street has blue and platinum bunting and medallions on the lamppost. Over on the Disneyland side of things, Disney 100 crests have been installed above the entrance with flora, fauna, and Merryweather already in place, along with a Disney 100 crest above the castle gates. The star, the wishing star, has been installed on the top of one of the turrets as well. As recently as today, new flags, banners, and sashes have appeared on Sleeping Beauty Castle. I feel like everything's almost ready and almost in place. There's still a few more things, but a lot of it's there.
Oh, Disney. Yeah, it's nice to see that they're getting all the stuff ready. I'm a purple fan.
Lots of purple. I do
like a lot of the purple. I think the banners coming down the tram route look great. I think that the banners that are up in the Esplanade look really good. I'm interested to see what this medallion that's going to show up in the downtown Disney district is going to look like. All of that stuff is great. The actual medallions themselves that are above the entrances to the parks and going down, I assume, eventually Main Street, but also Buena Vista Street, are kind of difficult to read, at least in pictures. I haven't seen anything in person, but people who have been there in person say that it's a little difficult to read. Of course, I like all the bunting and everything that they do. However, I am a little sad because for me, the concept art for the castle looked very iridescent, like there's some colors that changed. And I think Teresa even said this to me when we talked about this the other day together, was that flora, fauna, and Merryweather looked more like the colors that they are. And in the pictures that we're seeing from Disneyland, they're kind of just washed out. I don't know. It looks faded, like it's been there a while. And the banners leading up to the castle that somebody posted on Instagram today, because they had shown up, are not the same as what the concept art looks like. And I like the concept art better.
The one thing I'm wondering, because you're right, it does, the coloring is different from the concept art to what was installed. The one question I have, and I could be completely wrong, do you think they're going to, how do I want to say this?
Like color it?
Not color it, but do you think it's a lighting thing? Are they going to somehow like light them up? Because the concept art, Flora, Fauna, and Meriwether weren't like solid pink, blue, and green. They were kind of, it was almost, they were heavier saturation of the color on one side and it kind of faded. So I don't know. That's my only thing, is I wonder if it's to reflect off colored lights.
But that's not going to show up during the day.
I could be complete. This is me maybe being way too hopeful. But
if the concept art is what this ended up looking like, I would be happy with it. But I just feel like I don't know. There needs to be more done with it.
I have a love-hate relationship with concept art, and this is like case in point. They showed me this, and that's just what it is, right? It's just concept art. But I feel like when they put it out to the public, that's got to be the final take, or the final, you know, what the final product's going to look like.
Yeah.
So for us, it's just maybe a little confusing as to why it looks different. So maybe we will find out, but yeah. So the other thing I wanted to mention that was interesting was some of those banners that they had highlighting different milestones. Somehow there were a couple of banners that had some misprints. I do believe at least one of them, maybe both of them, have been taken down so that they get fixed. But there was a banner along the tram route that said Matterhorn Bobsleds 1955. Well, of course, we all know that the Matterhorn Bobsleds actually opened in 1959, not 1955. And shout out to Bob Gurr, because he posted a very confused looking selfie with this banner, like 1955. I thought that was hilarious. The other one of note that was had the wrong date was for Snow White, and they posted Snow White 1939 when the movie was released in 1937. I believe both of those have been taken down to be corrected, but it was just kind of a little fun, and leave it to Disney fans to, like, the day these things get put out, they're like, oh, that's, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting. It's always interesting when things like this sneak through.
Yeah.
and get put up in public. But overall, I'm curious. I'm trying really hard, because like you, Tag, I'm a little confused at how the decorations look, how the actual decorations are looking in photos versus what the concept art looks like. So I'm just holding out a hope that maybe photos aren't doing it justice, because like you, I agree the medallions look like they're maybe a little bit hard to read because they're all the same, that kind of like silvery platinum-y color.
Well, and let's take it a step further. Teresa, you and I both ordered the Disney Visa card that was supposed to have the same thing. And what was your opinion of that?
I think I was actually talking to James about that. So we ordered the new Disney Visa cards, and we got the ones that are, they're the Disney 100. But if you have the Premier membership, it was a metal card that they sent you, not a plastic card. I think because that iridescent-y color is on top of the metal, it dulled it down and didn't make it as shimmering, shining, and splendid as I was hoping for it to be. So I was joking with James that I want to order it and say, please, I don't want the metal card. Can I have the plastic card? Because I think it'd be more, it'd pop better on the plastic card. But anyways, that is way off to left.
No, but you were talking about the thing. So I was like, it seems like this whole, I almost wonder if some of this stuff
maybe
was supposed
not
to look this way and they sent it off to manufacturing and it came back and they were like, well, this isn't what we intended.
Unless maybe like the fabric they thought that they could get to for this like shimmery shiny didn't shimmer shine as like they, I don't know.
Something
happened.
Beginning sometime after the start of the Disney 100 celebration, Disney announced that Magic Band Plus will be able to interact with the Disney 100 decor around the parks. No official launch date or any details on what the interactions will be. In Disney World for the 50th celebration, guests could use their Magic Band Plus to interact with the 50 character statues throughout the parks.
How excited are you about this, Mr. I own three? Three? Only three
Magic Bands? I was burned by Magic Bands, and so I'm a little bitter.
But I think that this will be fun. And this is something that makes Magic Bands a little bit more worthwhile, in my opinion. I still have not purchased a Magic Band myself because I don't see the value in them just yet. But when you start adding more layers, more things that they can do, then to me that makes it, you know, more valuable, more fun. I do think as soon as they start doing like payments on the Magic Band, that might be when I invest.
Until then, I feel like you're just going to live vicariously through me playing with all the stuff.
Yep, exactly. And like, it's none of the stuff has been a big enough draw for me to purchase the Magic Band to want to do the thing.
Sure.
So like right now, the only interactive thing as far as like games to play is the Bounty Hunters game back in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. It did do all sorts of fun stuff during fireworks and World of Color and in different queues at different attractions. It would light up and buzz. So I think this is fun. I like that they're adding this element.
I do too. I just, I'm still upset about the charging situation.
That your battery died before we got to play Smuggler's Run.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Disney Gallery inside of the Opera House on Main Street is currently closed as it transforms to present Disney 100 Years of Wonder. The exhibit will feature artwork created by original Disney animators for some of the early films, alongside artwork created by Imagineers to bring those stories to life. An animator's desk and multi-plane camera will also be on display. I'm so excited about this.
It's cool. I feel like the exhibit that used to be there for the Haunted Mansion had been there for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And so it was time for it to be switched over, because I think a draw for this Opera House and for Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln and all that stuff is new exhibits in this gallery space.
Yes.
And because of COVID and other things, I just don't think they had something good. And so now they are putting this new thing in there, which I think will be great. I like the idea that they're blending the original Disney animator artwork with Imagineers sketches and stuff that show how it went from like animated, you know, movie
to
in the park. Yes.
Yeah. I'm excited about that too. I think that's a really unique perspective and not something that we necessarily have seen before. So I'm excited. You know us, Disney history, we're there. And the fact that this is included in your park ticket, there is a traveling exhibit that the Walt Disney Archives is doing to celebrate the Disney 100 celebration. I don't believe it comes anywhere close to where Tag and I are. So I love that we can experience kind of a taste of that same thing next time we visit the parks.
Yeah, I think it'll be really great. Weekly tiers who can't make it to the parks for the kickoff of the Disney 100 this week can tune in virtually this Friday. Disney will stream a kickoff at 2 p.m. Disneyland time this Friday, January 27th. The event will include special performances, behind-the-scenes looks at the new entertainment, fun Disney trivia, and more. I love when they do this because we're far away.
Mm-hmm. I think this is such a fun way to bring the magic and bring the excitement and the joy of the kickoff of something to those of us that aren't able to attend. Because obviously every single Disney fan that wants to be there on the 27th, it's not physically possible to fit everyone inside of Disneyland. So I think this is fun that they're kind of bringing some of the magic out to us as well. I feel like, and this is something that happened during the shutdown, I don't remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember them doing this many live special things from inside the park until the shutdown kind of changed things a little bit. And this is one of the things that I'm glad that they're continuing and that they're still doing, because I think it's really, really fun and it's a really great way to build the excitement.
Totally. Yeah, I am curious because this is during the day and I feel like a lot of the cool stuff they're going to have is like nighttime stuff, like because we're going to have Magic Happens come back, which whatever, but we're going to have World of Color 1, we're going to have Wondrous. So I just feel like, man, they could show off a lot of this cool stuff, but I guess you're not going to show a whole thing.
But, I mean, they've been testing these things when the parks were closed, so they may have footage from the testing.
That's true.
Not from the actual, you know, live shows.
Yeah.
Black History Month is returning at the Disneyland Resort in February. Celebrate Gospel is returning to the Fantasyland Theater on February 18th and 25th from 2:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. The Troubadour Tavern will offer a honey-glazed fried chicken bowl and red velvet bundt cake. Downtown Disney will offer family crafts, live musics, and special offerings.
Yeah, so they've kind of been doing this celebration off and on like throughout the year almost, it feels like. But they really kind of amp it up for Black History Month. Just to be clear, because when I was writing this, I almost said the wrong thing, and I want to make sure our listeners totally understand this, that the Celebrate Gospel is on February 18th and 25th, not 18th through the 25th, because I almost wrote 18th through the 25th. You said it correctly,
gosh,
but I want to emphasize
two days. The 18th or the 25th.
From 2:30 to 7.
From 2:30 to 7 p.m.
Yeah, because I first read it and I thought that it was through that time period. But no, it is just those 2 days. And those 2 days, there is a whole bunch of people that are coming to perform.
Mm-hmm. And then other fun things, if you aren't in the parks to join in on the celebration, you can head on over to Disney Grand Californian Hotel and Spa. The Mood Indigo Group will fill the Great Hall with their music and jazz there. And over at the Disneyland Hotel, this is cool. Overnight guests can paint an animation cell with artwork of Princess Tiana from the, of course, the movie The Princess and the Frog. How Ooh. Cool is that?
That is neat. Like a animation cell. So yeah. Is it going to be like the plastic or whatever?
So.
That sounds cool.
Dang. I mean, if anyone is able to do that, what a cool experience.
I know what I'm going to be looking for on social media.
Wow, how cool.
Well, of course, along with this, we have to like transition straight into Disney has released the Foodie Guide to the 2023 Celebrate Soulfully event. There's some good looking stuff on here.
Oh, before we move on, there was another fun thing. Not food related.
Okay.
For a limited time beginning in mid-February over in Hollywoodland at DCA, you might just run into Moon Girl from the new Disney branded television series Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, which is actually premiering on February 10th on the Disney Channel and February 15th on Disney Plus. We were at a panel at D23. The voice actors were talking about the show and promoting the show. We got to see some clips of the show. It looks so fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, another of special meet and greet to help celebrate as well.
It's good to see the synergy
yes,
of the things.
Yes, exactly. We
so,
love the synergy.
The Foodie Guide.
Yes.
The very first picture at the top of the Foodie Guide had me interested. So mm-hmm. The very first picture is a, where is it here?
Peach
it is
cobbler.
The peach cobbler donut. It's a vanilla dipped donut filled with peach compote topped with a cinnamon sugar puff. It just looks very good.
It's so cute. And the cinnamon sugar puff is Mickey shaped. It's adorable. Mm-hmm. What caught my eye is actually over at the Riverbell Terrace. This dish will be available February 1st through the 28th, and it's a Southern barbecue platter. It comes with brisket, fried chicken, burnt ends pork belly, mashed potatoes, baked beans, coleslaw, and a house baked biscuit. It looks like a feast, but it looks oh so good. Oh so good.
You know, this thing at Troubadour Tavern, the fried chicken bowl,
mm-hmm.
reminds me of something almost like what you'd see at Docking Bay 7, like because it's all like kind of in a bowl together.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a spicy honey glazed fried chicken.
Yum.
Served with four cheese mac and cheese, smoked turkey collard greens, and sweet potato cornbread.
Mm.
It's only available on the 18th and the 25th when we have all that special stuff going on over there.
And also only available the 18th and the 25th is the red velvet bundt cake. Comes with chocolate mousse, cream cheese frosting, and topped with chocolate chips. It looks delightful.
And I'm looking at this Simba popcorn bucket at the Troubadour Tavern.
It's so
which
cute.
The picture for it is funny because it's like somebody's holding it's made
like
to look like you're holding
of,
a
yeah,
yes.
like the circle of life Simba hold.
Ooh, what is this?
Also, in downtown Disney, there's going to be a couple of food trucks that are going to be available. First up, there's College Boy Cheesesteaks. It's a black-owned food truck that's going to serve up Philly cheesesteaks from local Philadelphians.
Oh, that's
Yum.
Cool.
Yum. And there's also Wings and Waffles, which is another black-owned food truck, and it serves up delicious sandwiches, plates, and more. Yum. How
is that,
delicious.
What is this for that? Like I'm trying to figure out what
no,
this is.
No, that is... It might be. Because it's wings and waffles,
yeah,
so and that's
that
a waffle.
Really good. Okay, we just ate before this, and it's making me hungry.
So both of the food trucks, College Boy Cheesesteaks and Wings and Waffles, will be in downtown Disney February 9th through March 5th. So make sure you go check them out. Lunar New Year started this weekend, and there is so much to see and do. Magic key holders can pick up a free Lunar New Year button from January 20th through February 15th under the Silly Symphony Swings. The Sip and Saver Pass is also returned. Be sure to check the pricings of the items if you get a Sip and Saver Pass to make sure you get your money's worth. I want to say $7 is usually the sweet spot, so anything over $7 is usually what you want to use one of those tabs for. And with it being the Year of the Rabbit, and the Year of the Cat, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit and his wife I've heard both. I've heard that she's his wife, and I've also heard girlfriend. But Oswald and Hortensia the cat are meeting and greeting guests. What a perfect pair for this celebration.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that just happened to work out really
and
nice. And
right? I want to say this is the first time Hortensia has been in a, like, has been a meet and greet in a Disney park, which is incredible.
Didn't even know who Hortensia was until this story.
She's adorable, though. She is so cute. So Oswald's adorable, too. I'm so happy that these two are sharing the spotlight for this event.
I don't know. I don't have any type of attachment to these two characters. So I, like, people are making a big deal about it, which is nice. Yeah, they're cute. But I don't know. I feel like I need to see, like, a cartoon or something.
I'm very intrigued by the history of Oswald, because Oswald, as a lot of you know, predates Mickey Mouse. And in, like, an alternate timeline, it could have just been Oswald and we never had Mickey, because Oswald was the original creation. However, Walt created him for a different, when he was working for a different studio. Right. So when he left, Walt left, but he wasn't able to bring Oswald with him. And so it was years and years and years and years later. It was, I can't remember when it was, sometime in like the early 2000s, I want to say, Disney was able to purchase the rights to Oswald back and kind of reclaim that piece of history. So that's what I think is so cool about Oswald is
but what about Hortensia or whatever?
Well, the same path with her.
Well, It's a Small World reopened this week, and with it came some new exterior lighting. The exterior now has green and pink lighting in addition to the blue and white from before. The new lighting package enhances the small show that happens on the quarter hour. And I did not know about this. Apparently, this has returned, according to some online sources, that the lights also change when the train passes by. That the accent lighting in the back kind of flows across as the train passes. Are you saying
paid attention close enough to notice that.
Yeah, Mice Chat has a link to a video that shows it now that they've added this, but I did not know that this was a thing.
That's cool.
And I feel like I need to wait now and see, like, when the train comes by, I need to see this.
I did take a video. I don't know if they do it for the holiday lights, but I did take a video while we were going through the Small World facade.
Well, they said that this came back, like it was missing for a while.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to put a link in our Discord chat, so if people are interested.
The link for the Mice Chat article with the link for the video is also in the show notes, of course.
Yeah, so it's kind of neat because, see, look, there's like a pink, and see, the blue is normal. But, like, as it starts to go, see, there's, like, purple shows up.
Oh.
And then in a minute, like, see,
it's
this turns
like,
more red.
It's like the lighting's doing the wave as the train goes by.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah. And see, now then, like, it just kind of follows it in a way. I mean, the train's going a little bit faster than the lighting's going. But see, then, like, the green and the yellow kind of follows it, too. So it kind of has this rainbow kind of effect.
I really like this lighting package. I think it looks really nice. It's got the fun and whimsical feel that is Small World, but I don't think it takes away from the beauty of the facade itself. I think it's a great accent.
I feel like this is realizing the dream of Mary Blair, right? Who came up with this? Because if you watch that 10th anniversary special, she shows it and then puts a colored light in front
of
it. So I feel like this is finally,
years
later, realizing her vision fully.
Wow. I just got goosebumps from that. That's cool. I'm glad you made that connection. That's cool. That's really cool.
I'm glad too. Usually you don't have such a positive reaction to things I say. No, I mean, like, because usually I'm complaining about stuff.
Oh, well,
and so
that wasn't a complaint. That was great.
Yeah,
that
was
really cool. Really cool.
It is so neat, and it's vivid, and I'm really glad that at night it can look like this, but
it's
during
gorgeous.
The day it's still bright and white and gold, because I think it looks best white and gold.
Yes, it's beautiful when it's white and gold. Well, the water around the Pacific Wharf area has been drained to begin work on transforming the area to San Francisco from Big Hero 6. Nothing has gone vertical yet, but hopefully it will be visible soon.
Apparently I'm seeing all types of things this week, Teresa. But I commented to Teresa as I was writing this that I never noticed that the entire bay area there,
water area,
when they drain it, like, all of it is themed.
I was impressed with that, too. Like, I really thought the rocks ended at a certain point.
Me too.
Like the waterline kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I've never paid enough attention to know that it's that same kind of stone look.
When they drain the main bay where they do World of Color, it's just flat concrete. Mm-hmm. So I assumed that over here was the main part of where the water is flat concrete. No. You could leave this drained and it would seem perfectly themed.
Yeah. No, it's actually quite beautiful. It's kind of, it freaks me out a little bit because I don't know if I've ever seen it fully drained like this. Usually when they drain it, there's still a little something,
a little something
water on the bottom. So you don't see the full thing bone dry like it is right now.
I'm excited to see this transformation because I'd like to see something, I guess. The only thing I don't like, and I think it's a structural thing, so I don't think they had a choice, is I wish that they were to transform the whole bridge to look like the bridge from the movie, because the bridge of the movie doesn't have that like bottom section, so it just seems like an odd like combination. I did just watch this weekend Big Hero 6 again, and that's a great movie. I really enjoy it.
It's really fun.
And so I'm excited to see how they transform this area.
I'm curious too.
And I'd also like to meet Baymax in the park. Now, we did meet Baymax in Disney World, but I'd like to meet Baymax in Disneyland.
I feel like having San Francisco, there's going to be a Baymax.
Oh, there has to be.
There's going
to
be a Baymax meet and greet. I don't know where it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. They best not be touching the Boot and Bakery walkthrough tour. What if they made that the meet and greet spot?
The rumor that I heard is where the beer truck is where there's going to be a meet and greet.
Okay,
that you
don't sacrifice my bakery walkthrough tour.
Weekly Tiers with ambitions to become magic key holders should act now. As of the recording of this podcast, Inspire and Believe level keys are available for purchase. They went on sale on January 17th, so who knows when they will go back to being unavailable.
I want to say that's the craziest thing about this news story is the fact that magic key sales have been happening for what, like a week now? That's crazy because the last time they went on sale, it was like 24, maybe 48 hours. I don't even know if it was 2 days. It was quick. You had to, like, if you didn't jump on it, you were out of luck. So this is really amazing that they've been on sale for a week now. So if you've been on the fence, now's a good time to look into it because, again, it is just the two levels that are available. Like Tag mentioned, it's the Believe and the Inspire keys. So those are the two top tier levels, but they're available. So, no word on if they're available because they have made more magic keys available or if it's because not enough people were renewing their keys. But for some reason, they're available.
Yeah. And for those people, I know that there's a couple people in our chat who are able to get keys that were waiting for it.
Which is so exciting.
Yeah.
Trader Sam's has unveiled more tiki mugs recently. The Hippopotami Tai and the Piranha Pool tiki mugs have been out of stock for a while, but they are back in stock now. The Hippopotami Tai mug is the fourth variation, this time in an orange glaze. Trader Sam's Piranha Pool mug is the second edition of this mug with an ombre glaze with a black and red combo. It's cool. There is also a couple of mixology events for the Food and Wine Festival on March 6th and April 10th.
The Hippopotami Tai one looks pretty cool, but I have to say, by far for me, the Trader Sam's Piranha Pool mug looks just the finish that they have on this looks so stinking cool.
It's cool. It's really, really cool. We've only been to Trader Sam's once.
I've been there
once. We've only been inside of Trader Sam's once. Like seeing these fun tiki mugs and their fun tiki drinks makes me want to go back. Now I know that I can get these drinks from the outdoor bar, but there's just something so much more magical about being inside of Trader Sam's. I want to like try and make sure we get reservations or can walk up and get in. I just want to go. Next time we're there, I want to go. I want to go so bad now.
Well, we have to make sure that we think ahead and get a reservation.
I can't remember if they're still doing reservations or if it's walk up, but it is a hard spot to get into. I do know that, but it's so fun. And I think I'm going to try a Hippopotami Tai just because it's fun. So much fun to say.
Well, there you go.
Pilots, we've detected some producer questions near Jakku. Report to your DL Weekly vessels and make the jump to hyperspace. The Saturn 7 Squadron will provide support during your trivia mission. Good luck, and may the Force be with you.
Welcome to Trivia Land. How are we feeling tonight? You got some great answers all bottled up in your brain and ready to burst forth onto the microphones?
We shall see.
I mean, I have lots of answers. I don't know if they're the answers to the questions you're going to ask.
Well, excellent.
But I have answers.
Let's see if we can pair your answers to my questions. Well, the listeners' questions.
Lovely.
Because tonight we are all listener submitted all night long. So let's go with our first listener submitted question from listener Kavehi S. What is the first song in Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln?
Oh, boy.
What's the what?
First song in Great Moments with Mr.
There's
Lincoln.
There's a song?
There's lots of songs.
Is that the... Wait. Is it the Two Brothers?
Two Brothers. That's what it's called. I'm like, I can think of it.
The current first song.
Two Brothers is still in there. I don't know what the current song is. Gosh, it's probably something in the
what
background.
The current first song.
It's, you know what it could be? It could be Battle Hymn of the Republic. I'll go with Battle Hymn of the Republic.
I feel like I'm sticking with Two Brothers.
Okay. I think it's a good choice, but consider the fact that Vern said that, it makes me weary.
You think it's the Battle Hymn?
Yeah, Battle Hymn of the Republic.
All right. Your second question, submitted by listener Brooke A. What served as the original inspiration for the Main Street Electrical Parade?
Oh, the water pageant in Walt Disney World.
Yeah, the electric water pageant.
Yeah, I think it's electric water pageant.
Electric water pageant. And it still runs to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Your third regular round question, submitted by listener Donna S. When opening Disneyland, there wasn't enough money for extra plants. So who did Walt Disney ask to tag the weeds with name tags?
Dang it.
And what language was used on the tags?
Latin.
I don't remember. It was the guy that was in charge of the horticulture, and I feel terrible that I don't remember this man's name, because he also did a lot of work for like the Jungle Cruise. And
it's not Harper Goff?
Nope, not Harper Goff. They had like this guy, all he did was like the plants. He was like the horticulture guy. Dang it. Because he also was the one that went around and like asked, he would like get trees from people and like dig them up out of their yards and put them in the parks because they were on such a like shoestring budget. He got very creative.
Well, they took a lot of trees too from building the I-5 freeway.
Yep. I can like see like images of him from the Imagineering story. I can like,
what does
I can
he look
see
like?
Him.
For some reason, all I can think about is Harper Goff.
It's not Harper Goff. No, it's not Harper
Goff. Well, I'm going to say Harper Goff because that's the only name that I can say, and it's better than saying nothing.
Ooh, I think this guy, he may even be a Disney legend, so I feel even worse.
Well, it's not like you have all the Disney legends committed to memory.
I think she might.
No, I don't. It was very eye-opening going to the courtyard where all of the different handprints are, because there are so many more legends than you would than you think there are. It's amazing. I can't remember what his name is. I'm gonna kick myself when you say it too.
Do you have a guess? Something
no,
I can write
I don't,
down?
Because it's something that's on the tip of my tongue, so nothing else, like, you know what I mean?
Okay. All right, we'll just write that down as you got nothing.
I got nothing.
All right. And your fourth and final regular round question from listener Todd B. The queue for Mission Breakout is loaded with Easter eggs from both Marvel and Disney. There's Figment, a bellhop hat from Tower of Terror, and even Harold from the Matterhorn, among many others. Near Harold, in the boiler room, is another animatronic from an extinct Disneyland attraction. Who is this animatronic, and what attraction is she from?
Isn't it?
I don't know who it is, but I think it's from the submarine.
That's what I was going to say. It comes from the submarine voyage.
I don't know what the name is, though.
And I think it's like an octopus or something, isn't it?
I honestly didn't realize it was I'm going to be honest. I didn't realize it was an animatronic. I thought it was just a stationary prop from.
But what was the species?
Yeah, it looks like an octopus.
It looks
kind
like
of
an
thing.
Octopus. Yeah, I think it's from. I think it's
from the
sea,
subs.
Not the sea
not
serpent,
the sea serpent.
But an octopus.
That apparently has a name that we don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So you're saying it's an octopus from the submarine?
Submarine voyage, yep.
Submarine voyage. Yep.
All right, final answer?
I think so.
Alrighty. And your bonus question tonight, submitted by Prince Damien. What is the only Disney movie that you enter the castle during the intro?
Oh, goodness. I can see this in my mind. It's not like...
Do you mean like the beginning of the actual movie?
Yeah, like the castle scene.
Or like
scene.
When they have the Disney castle and then it like goes through the tunnel.
That's what I'm thinking. You're talking like the castle that shows up that says Disney and then you go through it.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to say something like Jungle Cruise or Pirates or something, because it's
definitely
water.
It's not a classic. I know that, because we like right. A lot of them have like the storybook intros.
I'm gonna say Jungle Cruise.
I'll go with Pirates since you went with Jungle Cruise.
Pirates of the Caribbean. All right, Jungle Cruise and Pirates. Final answers.
Yes.
Final answers.
Okay. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Stick around until after the discussion topic, and we will all find out together.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we're actually back to a regular kind of discussion topic, a deep dive for the first time in a little while.
You know, throwing it back.
Yeah, we got some interviews scheduled and all that good stuff, but we thought we'd cover something. And Teresa picked a very good topic for this week for us, which is a deep dive into Toontown, with Toontown partially reopening on Friday with Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. We thought we'd cover the past, present, and future of Toontown.
Do you want to know something that is pretty amazing that I did? It just happens to be. Do you want to know what today is? Today, the recording of this episode just
is it
happens
like
to
the
be
anniversary
the
that it opened?
30th anniversary of Toontown opening.
Oh.
Isn't that crazy? So I think it's so cool that in the same week, Toontown is getting this big, you know, they're opening this big new attraction the same week as the 30th anniversary of the land itself. I thought that was, I mean, I'm sure nobody, maybe they planned it. Maybe they did, but I just think it's so cool.
Well, as Teresa said, Mickey's Toontown opened in January 1993 in Disneyland. I vaguely remember around this time period, because this is when, as a small child, I was interested in looking up Disney stuff and the internet wasn't really a thing. But I mean, it was a thing, but I just didn't have it. But I remember reading stuff, and you know where I'd get all my Disney news? I would stop on the way home from school in the travel agency and pull up the little brochures and look at stuff and learn about stuff that was coming. So I vaguely remember this. With its colorful and cartoon-style buildings, which, of course, is, you know, like the land that Toons built, it said the area was inspired by Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is anybody who's seen the movie, when they go into Toontown, that's where all the Toons live. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's very much like that. And it's really hard to see anywhere in Toontown that has like a straight line anywhere. Everything's wacky.
It's so fun. And it's such a cool interactive space, albeit, you know, and we'll get into it later. Time was not necessarily Toontown's friend. So I'm really excited that they're giving that area some love and kind of revamping and redoing stuff, because there's just so many there were so many hidden little gags and like fun little like photo ops and just a really cool fun area to explore.
I'm not sure what happened, and we'll maybe get into this, but I felt like they opened it and then just kind of let it
go. Yeah, I'm not sure either. But one really cool thing is Toontown has this really fun backstory that actually Toontown came before Disneyland in the Toontown backstory. Mickey and his friends moved to the Toon suburb in 1930. And then when Walt was looking for a place to build Disneyland, Mickey actually suggested the Orange Grove near his home. So after the park opened, Mickey and all of his friends would travel from their homes in Toontown over to Disneyland to come and meet with guests. Well, eventually the Toons decided to open their town and homes to the public, and they dug a tunnel through the berm to connect Toontown to the rest of the park. Isn't that a cute little backstory?
This is a cute little backstory.
I thought it's fun.
Of that it's always existed there and now we're connecting you to it.
Do you want to know what's interesting?
What's that?
So remember the Little Man of Disneyland?
Yes.
He lived where Disneyland currently lives, in where Disneyland was to be built, and currently lives there today. Who was it that went to the Little Man of Disneyland and asked if it'd be okay if the park was built there. I feel like these stories are either intentionally connected or not intentionally connected, but they're connected. And I think that's so, so fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's good to get the backstory and hear about that stuff. I guess I thought I had heard this backstory before about that it had always been there,
I
didn't know that they had like
predated
dug the tunnel and it had been there before and all of that stuff.
It's fun. It's so fun.
A dedication parade and ceremony took place to celebrate the opening of the land on January 25th, the day that this podcast goes out, but 30 years ago, for a celebrity parade was part of a media event. The first car in the parade had Michael Eisner in it. The car took him up the walkway of the land, and before going through the special archway into Toontown, he stopped and signed the official Toontown guest book. Many other stars also took part in the parade and fun, including Robin Williams, Whoopi Goldberg, Danny DeVito, Dan Aykroyd, and George Lucas. The event ended with Mickey and Minnie walking hand in hand through the decorated archway. I do want to say that in the research for this, there was a photo of George Lucas and Steven Spielberg standing together, and they looked so uninterested in being there. They just had such a blank look on their face.
But you know they were, because we know George Lucas is huge and was then and is a huge Disney fan. So I'm sure he was excited on the inside, Tag.
Okay.
But
what a star-studded event for opening Toontown.
Well, and like, so this, it opened not long after Aladdin had premiered. So it was a pretty big deal. You know, Robin Williams was like fun new Disney character being the genie from Aladdin. So I thought that was such a fun thing. And the pictures that they had of him, he brought his family with him. And so he's riding in a convertible. You can see what I think it's his wife and his daughter in the convertible. And he's got one of his kids one of those backpack things on his back as he's like riding.
Baby Bjorn, is that what they're called?
I don't know if that's what this one specifically is, but it's one of those like backpacks that the kids kind of sit in. But I thought that was so cool that he like did this experience and was, you know, doing this fun park thing, opening this new land, but did it with his family, even to the point of like they're riding in the convertible up to the land with him. I thought
that was so cool. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's like, okay. Yeah. Not a Baby Bjorn.
No, I don't remember what those
are
called.
But that's cool.
And the genie was riding in the convertible with them as well. I thought that was so, so fun. Well, on the following day, January 26th, the official dedication took place inside of Toontown. Michael Eisner was joined by Harry Anderson, who was Toontown's honorary mayor, to dedicate the land. The ceremony was energetic and colorful and, of course, ended with tons of confetti. Roy Disney and Frank Wells were also in attendance.
Okay, I know this is like a psychological phenomenon that happens to people, but you know how sometimes something will come up in your life and you get really interested in it, and then they like things show up everywhere?
Sure.
I have been on for like the last 2 weeks on this Night Court kick, and Harry Anderson was the judge for Night Court. And when I saw these photos earlier, I was thinking, is that Harry Anderson from Night Court? And you said that, and I was like, oh my goodness, he's everywhere.
I'm not crazy.
But that's really awesome that he was like the honorary mayor and
super fun.
I mean, that's not true. Because when they opened Galaxy's Edge, they had Harrison Ford and everybody. So they've had people.
George Lucas. Yeah. They do these like star-studded openings. I don't know. Prior to this, they did a big, there was a big to-do for New Orleans Square's opening.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah.
Hmm.
Very fun.
Hmm. Well, the land opened with most of the character houses, Minnie, Mickey, Goofy, Donald, and Chippendale. The Jolly Trolley, rest in peace, Jolly Trolley. Mm-hmm. I love the Jolly Trolley. And Gadget's Go Coaster.
We'll get there. Don't
Mickey
worry.
And Minnie's homes have always been walkthrough attractions, ending with a meet and greet with the characters. And what a great place to do that. Mm-hmm. However, Goofy's house, Donald's boat, and Chippendale's treehouse had quite a few changes made over the years.
This is where we get into the sad rise and fall that is the Toontown history.
Would you say the sad deflation of
Bounce House. Yes. And that's exactly where we're starting. So I'll be real upfront and honest. All of the sources that we used, I have all linked in here. There weren't specific dates as to why things happened, and I didn't go into all the reasons as to why they did it. We'll kind of cover some of that a little bit, because some of it I don't know if we'll ever know, like, the official, it was this specific incident
sure.
that caused this to happen. So we'll just kind of go over kind of a higher level as to what happened to the interactive areas. So when Goofy's Playhouse opened, it was a bounce house. How fun is that? But the attraction was also unique because it had a height limit, not requirement. So
sure.
if you were over a certain height, you were not allowed in. So, like, kids could go, but the parents weren't allowed
Doesn't
to go in.
Doesn't that seem wrong, considering that Goofy is so tall?
I don't know how he got around that height. That's a great question, how he got around that height limit. I'm not sure. But kids were able to bounce around the house with its balloon-like furniture, walls, and floor. However, in 2006, the bouncing elements were taken out and replaced with kind of the more traditional rubberized playground. Goofy's home will be reimagined and become Goofy's How to Play Yard. So I'm really excited about this. It looks like
in the new version.
Yeah, the new version that will be open March 8th. Of this year, but it looks like they're going back to the roots. They're doing it a little bit differently, but they're making these homes, these toon homes, interactive and play areas again for kids, and I think that's so fun. Next to Goofy's house is Donald's boat, and it was also filled with all sorts of fun activities for kids when it first opened. There was a fishing net that kids could climb on, a spiral staircase that took you between the two different levels, a slide, a fun way to talk and send messages between the first and second levels. It looks like on the bottom floor, it looks like Donald's mouth.
Oh.
And if you like talk into it, it goes up the tube up to what looks like kind of like a smokestack on the second level.
Sure.
And then like they can hear you up there.
Oh.
So you can kind of like yell back and forth.
I see those at playgrounds and stuff.
They're
yeah.
fun. But over time, most of the interactive elements were removed or closed off. So including pretty much everything. I think the tube that you could talk to the two levels, it was still open when we were there last, but like the slide was removed. They actually used the net to kind of rope off part of the area. So they had these really, and they still did, these really cute props. So it looked like Donald's like clothes hanging on the clothesline and his shoes and that kind of stuff. They kind of used that net to rope that section of it off. And it kind of just became a meet and greet with Donald, but it was still cute and just a little walkthrough. But the area is going to be reimagined as Donald Duck's Pond and will feature a splash pad. How cute.
I mean, that seems fitting.
Very fitting.
A lot of this I'm sad about. I feel, okay, so from what I remember, in the late 90s, early 2000s, Disney, I don't know what happened. Something happened. And I remember early days of Mice Chat and other online places would report on this too, that somehow it seemed like the attorneys took over and everywhere was trying to be made safe for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So literally, listen to this. They finally removed this. But you know the drinking fountain in Fantasyland that's right by the castle? It's got three tiny little steps up to it.
Yeah.
They had bright yellow and black stripping along all of those because they were like, oh,
trip hazard.
Don't trip. And they had that type of stuff everywhere. And to the fact where I feel like a lot of these things probably closed.
That's why.
Because of people being worried that, like, what if a kid in Goofy's bounce house falls and hits his head?
There were some incidents. So we'll kind of get into that. But there were some, there were injuries and there were incidents that kind of led to the eventual closure, which also paired with the overcautiousness that Disneyland was going through at that time, just kind of was a recipe for disaster for Toontown.
I just feel bad because I think that kids really enjoyed this, and I think parents enjoyed this area too, and I think they will when they redo it too, but the time between them closing all of this and now left it in kind of a sad state.
It was a little bit of a dark age for Toontown, yeah.
But I, you know, one of the things that I think parents like is having an area where they can take their kids and burn off some steam.
Thankfully, though, Tom Sawyer Island is a great place to do
it. I mean, that's
that
true.
Well.
I honestly don't know how that place is still open because I go hit my head on things in there. Because it's just so dark.
Maybe they have a height limit there.
Yeah,
so
you
just
haven't
been paying attention.
Maybe. Well, Chip and Dale's Treehouse at Acorn Crawl was another fun place for kids. And this is the one that I remember the most of why they took it out. Mm-hmm. The Acorn Crawl was a themed ball pit that was later closed due to hygiene issues. I remember reading somewhere.
I figured that was a very nice way to explain
why. I had read somewhere that from people that worked this attraction that
just think of it this way. This was themed for smaller children that were perhaps still wearing things like diapers.
Yep.
So
they said that they were swapping out the balls all the time.
Yeah, so you can connect the dots on the hygiene issues that could arise there.
Well, the treehouse had a rope and ladder course along with a 20-foot long slide. The slide was closed after some guest incidents. Chippendale's treehouse was removed during the current reimagining of Toontown, so no more Chippendale's treehouse.
Yeah, so this one, there were some broken limbs with the slide, so that's why that is what led to its eventual closure.
Gadget's Go Coaster is a fun yet short ride. The attraction time is the shortest at Disneyland, coming in at just 44 seconds. Now, does that include the chain lift? It has to include the chain lift.
I believe so.
Because that thing, you blink and you miss it. Gadget's Squirrel Maid Coaster was constructed by the inventor with salvaged items like soup cans, thread spools, combs, and, of course, acorns. The mini coaster will be renamed to Chippendale's Gadget Coaster when the land reopens in March.
Yeah, so from what I could see, it does sound like Gadget is still going to be part of the coaster. They're just... How do I say this?
More people know Chippendale than Gadget.
In 1993, that I think is when the Chippendale Rescue Rangers TV show was done. And Gadget, of course, was one of the characters on that show. So it was kind of interesting that they themed a coaster to a character of a show that they were just finishing.
Sure. But it was so popular.
It was very popular. And so, unfortunately, with time, the character didn't stick. So I think a lot of kids didn't understand who Gadget was, and so this was a way to learn about Gadget, but it was, some people got it confused with like Inspector Gadget, because they're both inventors and they're both, you know, very creative minds. I think she's a fantastic, I love her, she's a great character, but she is still going to be included in the attraction. They're just kind of combining the treehouse and Gadget's Go Coaster.
Yeah. And that's fine. I liked Gadget, as no surprise to anybody, because I'm such a nerd. I liked Gadget because she was like the nerdy one. I also liked Ninja Turtles. I liked Donatello because he was the nerdy one. So it's just kind of like the characters that people like. And of course, a lot of kids, you know, they like Chippendale and Monterey Jack, who was always goofy.
He was so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, you know, Chippendale Rescue Rangers was such a great TV show.
Zipper.
Yep, Zipper.
Do you know how many times I tried to make the plane that they had out of a bleach bottle and a balloon and everything?
That thing was
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So fun, so creative. Well, the Jolly Trolley was a cartoon spinoff of the version of the Pacific Electric Railway from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. The station area was located at the center of the route and was one of the first things that guests would see when they would walk by when entering Toontown. The route had just two stops, one at the Roger Rabbit Fountain and the other by the Mickey Fountain. The Jolly Trolley closed in December of 2003 due to both safety concerns and its low capacity. A trolley vehicle, though, was often parked at the station as a fun photo op.
Didn't it later, like, I feel like the last year or so that it was there was like a DVC thing was right around it?
So inside of the station became a DVC info kiosk, yes.
This thing was so cool. So imagine, you never rode it, right?
No, I didn't.
So do you know how when you get on Winnie the Pooh and the thing starts like rocking?
Yeah.
It did that as it went around the track.
I think that's so fun.
And I don't remember, and I feel like nowadays it'd be even weirder. I don't know where people queued for this. I don't know
at
how
that
people
station.
Yeah, but
oh, you mean at the stops?
People could like hop off and hop on. Like there wasn't a gate or so I get like the safety thing, but I don't even remember the logistics of how this attraction operated, but I remember liking it because of what we always talk about, which is it added kinetic energy to the land.
Yes. The one thing, you know, you bring up a good point because people could have just been literally hopping on and off of it. I just think it's so funny because Toontown is not huge.
No.
Like the fact that it had a station plus two stops for this little trolley, I think is hilarious, but again, like Tag said, it was a great source of kinetic energy, plus it was really adorable. Well, last but not least came Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin. It actually opened a year after the land did and opened on January 6, 1994. This dark ride was rooted in two different Roger Rabbit theme park dark rides that were developed for a Roger Rabbit's Hollywood area over in Florida at MGM Studios. Did you know that?
That was something interesting
I learned in this deep dive. But the unbuilt land included plans for two options of dark rides, but those ideas were combined and used to help create Cartoon Spin. So earlier plans for the attraction had actually multiple levels.
Oh.
And supposedly included a brief outdoor section.
That would have been cool.
Due to cost, this was later scrapped. And rumor has it, you can still see the exterior balcony for the outdoor track.
What?
I tried my darndest. I think I can spot what it is, but I do not have official confirmation on it. So take that with a grain of salt. I do feel like we did talk to a former Imagineer that worked on this. He did set design for it, though. So I don't know. I'm very tempted to reach out to him.
Where were you
and
thinking?
Confirm this. If go to Google Maps.
Uh-oh.
To the right. So it's to the right of the entrance is where I think it may have been.
I'm excited. I did not know this
at
all.
Yeah, so kind of like the part of the facade that would have been in front of the fountain, I guess would be a good way of saying
oh,
it.
Oh, sure.
That's my assumption.
So did you satellite view this to try to figure it out?
I'm wondering if that is something there. I don't know anything for certain, but it's suspect.
Suspect.
I could see it.
It's suspect. I'm just looking. Maybe. Huh.
I don't know for sure.
Like I
said, take it with a grain of salt, but that would be pretty cool if it was true.
This was taken when the Jolly Trolley was still parked out there.
At least the Jolly Trolley was parked.
I had to pull up a video, and there's a video on YouTube that somebody posted
of the
riding
trolley bouncing down the street.
They had taken some good, look at this. See the little thing would bop around? It had a little wind-up thing on the top.
Toontown's just so fun.
Oh.
There's just so many good, like, you go over to the exit by Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin. You've got all those little interactive boxes. And, like, if you open different things, you know, sounds would happen or, like, things would go off or what. It was just really fun. Really fun.
I enjoy all the, there's still a lot of gags, or there were before it closed, a lot of those gags kind of there. You'd, like, open the mailbox and it would say things, or you'd pull on different things. I'll tell you one thing that Toontown definitely has, which is a lot of photo ops, like a lot of things that you could take pictures of. I remember a lot of our trips, we have pictures of, there was the jail, so you take a picture like in the jail and everything. A lot of fun stuff. One of my favorite places in Toontown was the food, and I loved Pluto's Doghouse. It was a great place to get a hot dog, and it was next to Daisy's Diner and Clarabelle's Frozen Yogurt. They were kind of like staggered on this one section next to the city hall there. And
it was almost like a little food court.
Yes. And they had plenty of seating there. I found that it was always easy to find a seat to sit down and eat. It was wonderful. But it's being replaced with Cafe Daisy and Good Boy Grocer's Market. So we'll have to see what that kind of stuff looks like. You know, they used to have more hot dogs around the resort in general. And I feel like
they're lacking
in the hot dog area.
And then finally, the last thing that we're going to discuss is the former shops that used to reside in Toontown. This is interesting. I could only find information on former shops. I could not find any. I don't know if we I feel like there's got to be a shop somewhere.
Well, they took out the biggest one, the Gag Factory.
Yeah, they took. I know. They had to take the shops out to make way for Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it'd be really strange to have that whole land not have a merchandise shop.
Yeah, that would be weird.
So, for now, we're just going to talk about the merchandise of the past. There is the Five and Dime, which actually, when you entered Toontown, the Five and Dime was just behind where the station for the Jolly Trolley was, to the left of where the fire station was, next to City Hall, and just off of the dining area that Teg was just talking about. So that was the Five and Dime. I don't have any memories of the Five and Dime. However, the Gag Factory, huge fan of the Gag Factory. It was so cool in there. I loved, they had all of these moving parts and pieces along the ceiling that had all of these different like tune props that were constantly moving. It was just really cool. A lot of stuff to look at, but both of these shops are no longer there because they needed to be gone to make way for Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. I feel like with Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, at least you've got to exit through the gift. There has to be an exit through the gift
There'll
shop.
There'll be a
something.
Gift shop. There has to be.
Yeah, there has to be. So both of the tune themed gift shops for now are not present. But yeah, I was sad when I found out that the Gag Factory had to go to make way for Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. That's how much I enjoyed the Gag Factory. I thought it was really well themed and just really
oh
fun.
Definitely
just really really
well
fun.
And they had a pretty good like selection of stuff back there too, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I didn't even
big.
Think about
it
the
was
shops
a big shop.
They did show some photos, some people took some photos. What is this, today? I think this was today.
Yeah, today.
Of they took the construction walls down for Toontown, and you can kind of from a distance you can kind of see inside,
and when and you're probably when you're great. On the train you can see a lot more down in there too.
Oh, this marquee and stuff looks really good. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's strange to me is most of the things in Toontown were not straight lines, and this has a lot of straight lines, which seems a little strange to me. Because, see, the Runaway Railway whole marquee is pretty straight.
Yeah.
But look, these lights are going to look amazing.
It's going to be very cool. So that is Toontown, past, present, and future. Like you, we're very, very excited to see the reimagining of this. How do I want to say it nicely? I feel like this land had been forgotten for quite a while. And quite honestly, before Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway was announced, I didn't think Toontown was going to be around for much longer, because it just seemed to be the forgotten corner of the park. So I'm very excited that Toontown is getting some TLC and the love and care that it deserves, and I can't wait to experience it.
Yeah, I feel like it kind of suffered because, again, we talked about this earlier, it closes for fireworks. Mm-hmm. It's kind of geared towards smaller kids in general.
Well, and it used to open late, remember? Like,
that's
there
true.
Was a separate opening ceremony for Toontown.
That's true.
Because it didn't open with the park.
A lot of people complained that because it's supposed to be vibrant and toony, that the California sun would bake it,
And it would fade.
And it would fade and not look as great. I don't know. I'm hoping that they do. I'm hoping these updates make it really great. I'm interested to see some changes. Like, I still want to know what's going on in front of Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin, because they took a fountain out, but like, what's going to be there? Is it just going to be a tree now? I don't know. Shade. Lack of shade is another one, which I think they're also addressing
yes,
with
I think
this.
So too.
I'm excited. I'm optimistic. I know that we've talked previously, before we knew that this was happening, we had talked about that they should just put a Villains Land
I
back here.
I think that would have been a really great, like, just because they would have been out, quote unquote, outside of the park because they were on the other side of the berm.
I mean, that's true.
It would have worked well thematically. But alas, we're just getting a refreshed Toontown, which is great because it needed some love. And
fingers crossed that it is successful.
Yes, I hope so. I am looking forward to going back to the foods. I can honestly say I never had eaten anything in Toontown, like, ever.
Well, they'd been closed the last, like,
well,
forever.
And nothing there, I mean, nothing there really was exciting to me.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see what the new foods will be, what the new dining locations will be. Will it be the same type of menus with just new, like, location names? Mm-hmm. Or are they going to get some reimagined and fun foods back there as well?
Yeah, I figure the market will be kind of like what we have in DCA, where it's kind of like a fruit
like
stand or something. But the cafe intrigues me.
It could be cool. It could be really cool. Daisy, don't let us down.
I got to go back and look at the little model that we saw at D23 and see if I can see anything different. Because I didn't pay any attention to that. All I was paying attention to was the Runaway Railway and then, like, the houses.
The houses. Yeah, me too. Me too.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, DO Weekly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land, where we're going to find out how many right answers you gave, how many wrong answers you gave. I mean, Tag, you were right. You did have answers. So let's see how you did. You ready?
Yes.
Excellent. Your first regular round question, submitted by listener Kavehi S. What is the first song sung in Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln? You guessed the Battle Hymn of the Republic and Two Brothers. The correct answer we were looking for was America the Beautiful.
We overthought that one.
Can I also say that America the Beautiful should be our national anthem?
It is a gorgeous song.
Because it talks about how beautiful our country is and not war.
It is a beautiful song.
Right? Because that's the one that's purple mountains.
Gosh, now that you're saying that, I can, like, hear it in my head and see, like, the curtains and everything move, because there's multiple curtains, right? I can hear it in my head. I can see the main curtain rise. Gosh darn it. Good question, Kavehi.
Your second regular round question from listener Brooke A. What served as the original inspiration for the Main Street Electrical Parade? Both of you answering, the electrical water pageant at Disney World. The correct answer that we were looking for was the electrical water pageant at Disney World.
Good job, us.
High fives. Your third regular round question, submitted by listener Donna S. When opening Disneyland, there wasn't enough money for extra plants. So Walt asked this person to tag weeds with name tags.
Here you go, Teresa.
And what language did he use for the name tags?
Oh, I got so stuck on the
person. Both of you knew that those tags were in Latin. Tag thought that it might be Harper Goff. But Teresa, you had nothing. And I'm wondering if the name on the tip of your tongue may have been Bill Evans.
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry, Bill. I'm sorry, Bill Evans, that I forgot your name. He was like, if you haven't got a chance to watch the Imagineering story, that's a good kind of taste to see some of like the creativity that he and his team went through. But yeah, the things that he had to do was just really cool.
You know, they did cool things like they needed stuff that looked fancy for the Jungle Cruise, so they just turned trees upside down and the roots were
they
up.
They did all sorts of very creative things.
And your fourth and final regular round question from listener Todd B. The queue for Mission Breakout is loaded with Easter eggs from both Marvel and Disney. There is Figment, a bellhop hat from Tower of Terror, and even Harold from the Matterhorn, among many others. Near Harold in the boiler room is another animatronic from an extinct Disneyland attraction. Who is this animatronic, and what attraction is she from? You said that it was an octopus from Submarine Voyage. The correct answer that we were looking for, Dolores the Octopus, was featured in Country Bear Jamboree and was the girlfriend of Terrace, who played the guitar in the attraction.
I'm shocked that we got that half right. Right.
That makes two attractions that there are pieces of Country Bear Jamboree in.
I'm gonna have to get my I know where it is. I'm gonna have to get my binoculars out and ready next time we ride Guardians.
Well, you're gonna have to watch.
You can't, like, she's kind of in the shadow, so I feel like you'd need like binoculars to like get a better look at her.
And then you need to know
Dolores
what she looks like.
The octopus.
Yeah, because they were out in the wilderness and they had an octopus for some reason.
Yeah, I was gonna say wonder how that happened.
And your bonus question tonight, submitted by Prince Damien. What is the only Disney movie that you enter the castle during the intro?
Oh, yes.
Tag said Jungle Cruise, and Teresa said Pirates of the Caribbean. The correct answer that I was looking for was Enchanted.
Oh, okay. I feel less bad not knowing that one because I don't know. I think I've seen Enchanted maybe once. And you know what? It makes sense. Because you're going into the, like, the cartoon world in the beginning.
When did Disney start doing this castle for intros?
I don't know. It's gorgeous.
Because Enchanted was 2007.
It's, with the, like, landscape and all that.
Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Do you have some awesome questions that are going to help us really stump them next week? If you think you've got that perfect question, feel free to send that to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.